good conversation. Unabashedly Wisconsin. This is Up North News Radio. Here's Pat Kreitlow.
Here we go. It's Tuesday, November 1st. Good morning, Wisconsin. Welcome to beautiful Chippewa Falls on Lake Wissota, where we're going to have just a lovely day again for a couple of days here. Very non-November-like weather for starting November. I'll take that deal. Coming up this hour, we're looking to talk to Hans Breitenmoser up in Lincoln County about some farm and rural issues around the state, including whether this outbreak we're hearing about of avian flu is going to have an impact on your Thanksgiving dinner plans one way or the other. Tomorrow, we will have Matt Rothschild of the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign and Dick Ausman, candidate for Congress in the 7th District up north. He's the Democrat running against incumbent Republican Tom Tiffany. If you'd like to reach us, our email address is radio@upnorthnewswi.com and our phone number 715-388-7155, those phones being monitored by our own Aaron Zomers back at our headquarters. Our mothership. Have we come up with a proper term yet for where you are down there? Is there a better description than headquarters?
Not
mothership.
Sure. I have heard it called the Devil Radio World Headquarters
before. Oh, world. Yeah. Okay. So for those folks who are listening on Devil Radio in Madison, yeah, World Headquarters. I like that.
I guess now Civic Media World Headquarters.
Yes. Yes. Of course, Civic Media. The calendar tells us not only that's November but that we are 7 days out from the election. The voting finally ends at 8 o'clock next Tuesday night. I was going to say begins. The polls open next Tuesday at 7 a.m., but voting's actually going on right now. And people have been putting, by the thousands, have been putting their absentee ballots in the mail that were sent out to them, filled out, got a witness to sign it, sent it back. If you still have that absentee ballot, today would really be the day to get that back in the mail so that you're giving the U.S. Postal Service a full 7 days, because that mailed ballot has to be in your clerk's hot little hands by 8 p.m. next Tuesday when the polls close. That's also the deadline for absentee ballots to arrive, and you certainly don't want to mail it too late and then have your ballot arrive too late to count. So if you don't get it in the mail by today, it would be really good advice to then walk it right into your clerk's office. Do not use a drop box, even if there's one there. Take it right into your clerk's office. You'll probably be asked to show ID and hand it over and be done with that and be done with, what's been a memorable year for campaign ads. They have been so far beyond our already low expectations for political advertising, and in ways that, I mean, shameful does not begin to describe. And in some cases, we've talked a lot about the race baiting that's done in these ads, and not just in Wisconsin, but in other places as well. But also just for the fantasy that is being spun in these ads. I mean, Tim Michaels is ending his campaign as he began, and these are like first person ads of him and a pickup truck driving around and just, you know, giving some straight talk into the camera as he drives around the state in his pickup truck, which probably feels a lot different to him compared to, you know, whatever boat he's taking around, you know, Long Island Sound, you know, living out in Connecticut. But for a while, he gets in the pickup truck, talks to the camera, and the things that he says, again, are in the fantasy realm. In his mind, Kenosha is still on fire, and that the fire is going to be spreading to Chippewa Falls and to your hometown any moment now. That people are being paid not to work, when what people got was an economic stimulus check because they had lost work, because somebody told Tim Michaels there was this pandemic that killed over a million people in this country. And just spun this web that, again, it's a great fantasy if you're living in, you know, right-wing media land, but it's not the real life of Wisconsin, where more people in Wisconsin are working than ever before. The unemployment rate is the lowest it's ever been since it, you know, first started getting measured regularly just over 50 years ago. Wisconsin's working, and in, you know, Kenosha, the healing still goes on, but the need is still as great as ever for police reform. let's not forget what prompted the demonstrations and the protests in the first place, which, yes, got out of hand, but do not excuse what prompted it and that need for police reform that is still out there greater than ever. But again, in political ads, you can make things sound however you want, and then it's up to the rest of us to try to decipher it and hope that, you know, you'll feel like you're making a vote that is looking toward the real long-term future of Wisconsin rather than the short-term disagreements that we all may be having. But to get there, we've got to get past an election that, again, has been undermined since going back 2 years. This election has been undermined as well by those who want to try to give you the feeling that elections are not safe and secure and accurate, and they very much are. And on the other side of the break, we're going to talk not just about a case we already know about where a right-wing activist illegally obtained the ballots of other people and is now facing charges, and he thinks he's a hero, but it has apparently inspired a copycat who has requested and received ballots from our service members who don't get to vote if somebody else requested the ballots for them. It doesn't mean the system's wrong. It means they're wrong. They're criminals and should be prosecuted to the full extent of the law. That and much more coming up after this break. You're up north. Meanwhile, here on Lake Wissota, it's 32 degrees. We're going to head up to 67 today. Just such a nice couple of days. Really hope you get a chance to get out and enjoy it. Looking to talk to Hans Breitenmoser coming up in our next segment. But first, coming back to our stories, looking at the election, which will take place just 7 short days from now. And what we teased beforehand, heading into the break, was the whole notion of absentee balloting. The rules that currently exist to make sure that, you know, people who try to commit fraud on the system are prosecuted. And the people who say, well, because there are rules against fraud, that must mean the system is fraudulent, which it isn't, of course. Specifically, in Racine County, we're talking about the activist Harry Waite, who fraudulently and admitted that he fraudulently applied for and got the ballots of people that were not him to try to show that there was some kind of flaw in the system, when what it showed was if you try to get somebody else's ballots, you will face criminal charges. And that's what he's facing right now. But he remains, you know, unapologetic and, in fact, continues to criticize those who are working to keep our elections fair and safe and accurate. He recently posted about Ann Jacobs, one of the Democratic members of the Wisconsin Elections Commission, and, you know, took shots at her in a couple of posts, including one, if I find it here. He also refers to Megan Wolf, the Wisconsin Elections Commission administrator, in talking about shocking malfeasance by the Wisconsin Elections Commission. To the gulags for Megan Wolf, Ann Jacobs, and other derelict Wisconsin Elections Commission officials. To the gulag is what this guy had to say. I mean, not that he's, you know, an outlier. Listen to Carrie Lake here. She's the Republican nominee for governor in Arizona, and right now is favored to win, despite being, I mean, more Trump than Trump in terms of just putting crazy conspiracies and lies out there. And, you know, also has the, you know, the compassion of a twig. This is what she had to say to the crowd, making a joke at the expense of Nancy Pelosi and her husband, who'd been attacked, while talking about the issue of guns and safety.
It is not impossible to protect our kids at school. They act like it is. Nancy Pelosi, well, she's got protection when she's in D.C. Apparently her house doesn't have a lot of protection. But.
Wow. I mean, just wow. This is what we're at now, is cheering and laughing at violence and personal injury, and making threats about, you know, creating political prisoners out of people with whom you disagree. And I would love to go back to a time where that was a bug and not a feature of the system, where we could all laugh it off and say, huh, did you hear what he said? Did you hear what she said? Isn't that just crazy? But we can't do that anymore because it's being said so often and with such venom. It's not some kind of a half-hearted joke. And the jokes are being perpetrated by people who are, in fact, trying to rig the system, while they accuse others of trying to rig the system as their excuse. And that's what we have in people like Carrie Lake in Arizona, like Harry Waite in Racine County, who has apparently inspired others. Because now the Waukesha County Sheriff's Department is investigating who requested absentee ballots on behalf of members of the military and had them sent to the home of a Republican state lawmaker. That's the beginning of a story by Molly Beck in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. These ballots were sent to a state legislator who has also espoused and spread conspiracy theories, though she herself, Representative Janelle Branchon, is not necessarily condoning the fraudulent obtaining of somebody else's ballots, but she's also spouting the Harry Waite line that this somehow shows a flaw in the system rather than somebody using the system fraudulently. So Representative Branchon said on Monday that she had contacted law enforcement and for some reason also contacted former Supreme Court Justice Michael Gableman, who led a politically motivated, botched, and expensive partisan review of the 2020 election. Branchon said she had received three ballots from clerks in three different communities. And in each case, there was a woman's name, Holly, on there who may or may not exist. But this person, allegedly named Holly, apparently requested these ballots from members of the military and then sent them to Representative Branchon, who chaired the Assembly Elections Committee, ostensibly as evidence that there is still fraud in the system. Now, again, these three ballots and the handful of ballots that Harry Waite requested would come nowhere near swaying the results of an election. But that's the image that they're trying to cultivate, even though, again, going back to 2020, there is no evidence of that. None. Zero. Merely saying that there's ways to get ballots that aren't yours does not in any way, shape, or form invalidate the actual results of the 2020 election. Now, Branchon, of course, said that, you know, while somebody maybe was trying to make a point, she said it's sad that people feel they have to break the law to get the attention of the legislature. This is the second time citizens have tried to point out loopholes in our elections. Again, we're conflating two things here, that by saying there's a loophole out there, that somehow means the entire system is corrupt. It's not. The Waukesha County District Attorney and the Sheriff's Department are working on gathering data from the Elections Commission, according to Elections Commission spokesperson Riley Vetterkind. And they say they plan to work with law enforcement partners as appropriate to address the allegations. Molly's story goes on to talk about the crimes committed by Harry Waite, leader of a Racine County group that continues to promote false claims of voter fraud from 2020. He is facing two counts of election fraud, two counts of unauthorized use of an individual's personal identifying information in order to request their ballots to show that violations of the law are possible. On Monday, a post in Waite's group on social media called Branchon a patriot for highlighting what the group calls our problems in the state system to request absentee ballots. Branchon, you may or may not recall, repeatedly held hearings promoting false claims of voter fraud and 2020 election conspiracy theories. Democratic State Rep Mark Spreitzer of Beloit, also a member of the Elections Committee, noted that if another Republican, in his words, has committed election fraud, they should be prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law. I hope whoever did this is caught so we can send a clear message that this will not be tolerated. For obvious reasons, military voters need to be able to vote absentee, and we should not tolerate anyone who wants to make our service members pawns for their political agenda. And early in the article, Branchon, you know, got something right when she said this is really a case of stolen valor. This is somebody who is seeking to get the ballots of members of the military, which would deprive them of the right to vote. Now, again, this is something that can be corrected by Election Day. And for all we know, entirely speculative, for all we know, these particular members of the military may have given their okay, as did some of those who gave their okay to Harry Waite before he requested ballots on their behalf. But again, proving a flaw in the system, proving that you can walk into a bank with a gun and rob it, does not mean the bank should close. It means the person who tried to rob the bank should be prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law. But of course, that is not what people like Harry Waite say, who had put up a message about sending Ann Jacobs and other members of the Wisconsin Elections Commission to the gulag. Waite went on to post, "The military voting loopholes exposed by Patriot Janelle Branchon highlight the ineptness, incompetence, and malfeasance of numerous Elections Commission officials." He goes on to say, "Megan Wolf and Jacobs and others are enemies of we the people." Okay. All right. Stop right there for a second. And again, the people that I want to directly talk to are anybody who is Republican leaning or flat out Republican who heard that and did the same thing I just did and said, hold on. Because I want to make sure that every one of those conservatives, Republicans, what have you, understand that we see you. We see that you are as upset and angered and are frustrated as the rest of us, that somebody who ostensibly is on your side is using phrases like they are enemies of we the people. There are no enemies of we the people, unless you want to make the case that that would be people who, I don't know, would want to undermine our democracy by installing somebody who did not win an election with false claims of fraud. And yet, even then, even though I think those people might be closer to that definition, you don't hear people calling Harry Waite or Donald Trump or Janelle Branchon enemies of we the people. That's the kind of rhetoric that creates this, you know, incendiary environment that we have that led to an insurrection, that led to an assassination attempt on the Speaker of the House that ended with her husband having a fractured skull. It's that kind of joking by Carrie Lake, who may very well be the next governor of Arizona. It's all of that, that every one of our conservative and Republican friends can't just roll their eyes over, but really has to this year say, I don't know who these fools are, but this is not the Republican Party that I grew up with. It's not the Republican Party that I frankly still want to be a part of, with positions that I respect. These clowns are making me look bad, are making me and my fellow Republicans look bad, is what I do believe more and more people are saying across the country and across Wisconsin. But it's only going to work to the extent that, you know, those voters essentially put this batch of candidates in a timeout and does not vote for them this November. Aaron. Oh, Aaron's letting me know that Mark from Prairie du Sac is on the line. Well, hey, Mark, I got a minute for you. What's going on?
Hey, yeah, well, I grew up in far northern Wisconsin, but I've lived down here in the southern part of the state for 40-some years now. And it's disappointing that people are not willing to, hopefully people will repudiate these Republicans and not vote for them. But unfortunately, I think Janelle Branchon, I mean, that if she was in contact with this person that did this prior to this, her getting those ballots, she should be removed from office. I mean, that these people, the elected officials that took an oath to the Constitution that are clearly in violation of the 14th Amendment, Section 3 of the Constitution by, you know, aiding and supporting, giving aid and comfort to the insurrectionists that should be removed from office. They're oath breakers. They're violating their oath. I mean, it just, what just struck my mind, I saw that Ivanka Trump has a book coming out about the called The Trump Card. Mm-hmm. And apparently there she kind of justifies and they're lying is okay if it furthers your narrative.
Oh my God. That's Mark, that's just crazy. I appreciate the call on that. And I'll look forward to talking to you more about this as we go through these final 7 days until the election. But you know, Mark is spot on that there's an oath involved here of putting country before party. We'll be back.
Follow Up North News online anytime. Search Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter for Up North News WI and our homepage, upnorthnewswi.com.
All right, well, Hans Breitenmoser joins us every couple of weeks or so on Tuesday mornings. He's a Lincoln County farmer up near Merrill. And continues to be active both in farm and some political matters. He was quite a leader on the Fair Maps referenda around the state, just trying to make sure that the rural voice is better represented in places like Madison and in Washington, D.C. It's always nice to visit with him. If you're watching on the Facebook video feed or on Twitter as well, sometimes you see him, sometimes you don't, because as we've established in his previous visits, high-speed internet, also known as broadband, isn't exactly everywhere yet. And the same can be said for Lincoln County. So sometimes if you don't see him, you might still hear him, but we still get to say good morning to Hans.
Hey, good morning, Pat. And yeah, it's uncanny. Every time we get started, my internet connection starts to get a little tough, but I hope you can hear me all right.
Yeah, we hear you clear as a bell. So nice to have you here. And again, it's radio. We're good with that. But yeah, again, you looked, you know, bright-eyed, bushy-tailed. It's almost like you're a farmer or something, and moving you to the early morning shift does not appear to have taken a toll on you.
No, I think we'll be fine. I think it's we'll work it out.
Well, this is not a quiet time of year for you. What are you and your neighbors up to?
Yeah, well, it's pretty busy. Obviously, people are trying to combine corn and soybeans. Most of the corn in our area has been chopped. There's still a lot of corn to combine. We got our high moisture combining done last week, and we got our soybeans done last week. So we're still doing, we're waiting for some corn to dry down further to be able to bring that to town. So in our area, most of the beans are off, but there's still quite a bit of corn out there. And of course, there's a lot of manure to be hauled as well.
Well, yeah, that manure ain't going to haul itself, you know.
That's right.
Can we talk for a bit, especially since we've got new audiences in the Milwaukee and Madison areas? So can we talk about crop moisture for a minute? Because again, any little part of the food chain, you know, that requires extra costs, that's something that conceivably could be seen, you know, in consumer prices, whether it's at the grocery store or at some other retail level. You know, certainly prices that farmers will pay for other material down the road. And crop moisture is actually a rather important component this time of year as far as what you then have to do if the numbers aren't quite how you like them. Can you kind of explain to us city folk how that works?
Well, I can try. Of course, we have a dairy farm, so most of everything that we use is consumed by our own animals. But the soybeans that we grow a few acres of soybeans as a cash crop. And in our particular case, anyway, they happen to be edible soybeans that are used in the overseas market. Those beans have to be at 14% moisture. If they're higher than that, the elevator won't take them. And corn is kind of in that same 14-15% range. Corn is a little more forgiving because you can bring it to the elevator at a higher moisture, but then you suffer the shrink on that and you suffer the drying costs, depending on what, you know, what gas, you know, propane, natural gas is worth. That can be, you know, pretty prohibitive. So farmers try and let their crops out in the field as long as they can, so that they don't have to eat a lot of the drying costs. But then that also has to be balanced with, you know, the ability to harvest that crop while the weather is still conducive to do so and not let that crop out there, you know, all winter long and that type of stuff. So it's a little bit of a balancing act, trying to figure out, okay, how many acres do you have left? How much time do you have? And then the availability of custom operators and so forth as well.
And I'll say, being married to a dairy farm daughter, that is, she's so happy right now when we're driving and seeing these perfect conditions, because there's other years where we might be driving and we're just, I mean, we are heartbroken for people we haven't met, because we see that because of some really heavy rain in say, you know, early October or something, you know, they're not going to get in there until well after the ground is completely frozen, and unless you're fond of having your equipment stuck in the mud.
Yeah, no, for sure. We're only as good as the weather that we have to work with. And this year we've been very fortunate. The ground conditions have been dry enough to get things done. But yeah, I've seen my soybeans, you know, buried in snow, and crossed my fingers that the snow would melt and things would dry back out again. So yep, you're always looking at that weather forecast for sure.
Yeah. Yep. No doubt about that. So I asked, now again, you're a dairy farmer. You're not raising, you know, turkeys or poultry or anything else, but you're kind of our touchstone on some of these things. And we always appreciate just a quick little overview from a rural perspective of the things that all people in Wisconsin agriculture have to deal with. And in this case, we're going to talk about what's called avian influenza. And it's something that, again, we've talked about, you know, we hear about bird flu. We hear about all kinds of, you know, ailments that can strike whether it's a crop or livestock or what have you. And in this case, it's something called HPAI, highly pathogenic avian influenza. And as a result, it is leading to poultry, turkeys, chickens, otherwise, having to be depopulated, which is a very kind way of saying the entire farm's you know, stock of animals has to be destroyed once avian influenza infects that area. Hans, can you give us your own overview of what this is, what the danger is, and is it something that you know, should be especially concerning to Wisconsin, you know, as a whole, consumers as a whole, or is it just something to take note of and it might affect, you know, prices at some point?
Yeah, well, you're breaking up there again, Pat. That's why I stopped my video again. But yeah, your earlier statement that I'm a dairy farmer and I don't know much about turkeys is absolutely correct. But the poultry industry is not a small thing in Wisconsin. It does create a lot of wealth, and there's a lot of, you know, good quality protein that people around the state and around the country and around the world get to take advantage of because of, you know, the hard work of all the poultry farmers in Wisconsin. But as far as the avian flu thing goes, you know, it's just heartbreaking when you hear about these stories where these entire barns have to get, you know, taken out from the standpoint of if there's some sort of a flu in there. It's the top priority of these producers to make sure that there's a good quality product going out the door. So they're struggling with this. I think, you know, these things have always been around to a certain extent, but perhaps they're only exacerbated by, you know, different migration patterns and so forth coming on due to climate change. I think that's probably got to be at least a portion of the issue. And then I would also worry that, you know, the larger and larger that these barns get, we have more eggs in the basket in terms of, you know, these flocks growing larger. So, and that's an economic issue that the producers themselves are, you know, trying to respond to make sure that with thin profit margins on each bird, you got to have more birds and so forth. So, you know, it comes down to that financial component as well.
Yeah. The national, you know, versions of these stories talk about, you know, how poultry production is being ravaged. Turkey availability has drastically dropped. And as a result, that shortage will translate into higher turkey prices. And I would imagine, you know, chicken prices as well as we head into the rest of the year. Now, I say that only to pass along, you know, what the national news reports are saying. You know, I always enter that with a little bit of skepticism, not to say it's unfounded that consumers may end up paying more, farmers may end up getting less, but, you know, much like the oil companies, I'm not entirely convinced that sometimes these crises aren't used as a reason to maybe increase their corporate margin, you know, in order to affect the farmers and the consumers. But the, you know, the middlemen always seem to be okay. And Hans, I'm not asking you to pass judgment. I'm just giving my two cents that I'm not saying this isn't serious. It could lead to increased prices, but sometimes I feel like, you know, we're affected as much by what we don't know as what we know when it comes to, you know, the massive agriculture industry that we have in our country.
Yeah, I would agree, Pat. I mean, I think it would be pretty naive to suggest that you know, people don't profit on other people's misery from time to time. And I think this is one of those examples where, yeah, you know, we've seen it in agriculture for decades now that you know, big ag, as far as the consolidation of processing and retail, has definitely put pressure both on the consumers and the producers. And you know, as farmers, we have a history of, you know, grumbling about the middleman, and that's not always fair, because obviously we need a lot of people along that food chain to add value and make sure that the turkey that comes out of that barn or the milk that comes out of my bulk tank ends up in a form that consumers can actually, you know, consume. And there's a lot of good jobs that go along with that all the way along the way. But there also has been a lot of gouging and you know, things of that nature that people are taking advantage of, for sure. So yeah, I would caution that some of that, you know, money that is being lost is definitely being lost on the farmer end of it, and not so much on the corporate side of the processing.
Yeah, I think it's just, the bottom line for consumers is, if you're going to notice higher prices, don't yell at your grocer. They didn't have anything to do with this. Don't yell at the farmer. Chances are they had very little to do with this. It is, in fact, a function of a strain of influenza that is decimating flocks and maybe to a degree things that happen at the corporate level. Let's get back to the on the farm level and talk about the FFA, Future Farmers of America. And again, I come into it as somebody that while you know, married into a farm family, they were not horribly active in FFA, and in part because there were, you know, dozens of cows that had to be milked every day and not a lot of time for other activities. But that by no means negates, you know, the work and the passion that other young people have put into the FFA. And they recently had their national convention. And so I just wanted to spend a moment just to kind of get your oversight of not just the FFA itself, but the value of keeping kids on the farm, or encouraging those who maybe marry into farm families. You know, this is something that is, I don't know how else to put it. It's the one of the best slices of America out there is how hardworking these young folks are, especially in such a trying time to be in farming.
Yeah, it is fun to watch. I was in FFA when I was a kid, and you know, to your earlier comment that, you know, the other definition of FFA was father farms alone, because when the kids were off doing activities and so forth with FFA, they weren't at home doing chores, and there was so that was the father farms alone was the joke. It's a interesting organization. They've been around for eons, and as we have fewer and fewer active farms, we've got fewer and fewer kids coming from a farm background. But FFA does attract kids that are non-farm kids, you know, the neighbor kids, and sometimes more and more we're seeing urban youth involved. And it's grown to be such a wide variety of things that it's just one more youth organization that I think is really preparing youth for all sorts of careers, and especially just you know, helping kids grow in terms of you know, getting a leadership type of exposure, so that they can you know, be the next generation of leaders in ag and outside of ag.
I was noting in Wisconsin State Farmer that with the national convention happening, nearly 70,000 FFA members from across the country gathered recently in Indianapolis. And Wisconsin members not only attended, but captured top honors in many areas. And I do just like the acknowledgement that farming is about a lot more than, you know, you're not just milking, just running the tractor. This is a business. And there are a lot of things to know about the business side of keeping a farm operating.
For sure. And like I say, it's FFA has done, I think, a phenomenal job in exposing youth that don't come from farms to all the different aspects of production agriculture, but then all these other pieces on down the line. And again, it just translates so well into so many other, careers that kids can get involved in, as they grow up. And of course, it's always fun to see Wisconsin doing well in any kind of national competitions, whether they're FFA or what have you. That's always kind of fun.
Exactly. Hans Breitenmoser, good to talk to you. Have a great week.
Yes, you too, Pat. Thank you very much.
All right. We'll wrap up our show for this morning right after this. This is Up North News Radio. Tell you what, nobody's in the farm fields right now. As I look out across the way here, there's just this truly a blanket of fog over the cornfield. It just starts about 2 feet off the ground, goes to about, 15 feet off the ground, and that's it. You can see the sky and everything else, just this perfect blanket on the fields and down in the bowl of Lake Wissota as well. But it's going to be a very nice day, and we appreciate you having you along. Joe is on the line as well, and so we appreciate you being here. Good morning, Joe.
Yeah, hi, Tom. I just want to tell you how much I'm enjoying the show. I think it's really one of the things I'm appreciating is just the breadth of Wisconsin that's being illustrated, all the way from your talk with Angela yesterday from Milwaukee to Hans, who was just talking about concerns of farmers in Wisconsin. I found it really helpful. And there was a line that Angela had when she was talking to you yesterday. She was talking to you about, she used the line from, or maybe it was you, from the north side of Milwaukee, to the North Shores or to the North Woods. And I thought it was a really wonderful way to sort of sum up. I think it's so easy to forget that this state is beautiful because it is diverse. It is just up the, from Mississippi River to the North Woods, to our dairy industry, to cities like Madison and Milwaukee and their vigor. I just hope that people, when we head into this election, would realize that one of the things that's so lovely about the state is the fact that it has always been diverse, but yet creates this common good. And so that it's horrendous when you have people who are like Senator Johnson, who are posting these race baiting ads, and the groups that support him posting these race baiting ads. I would point out that one of our heroes in Wisconsin culture, I've said this before and I'll say it again, is Vince Lombardi, who as a Italian American kid in New York was treated very poorly and discriminated against. When he came to Green Bay in the 60s, he was notable for his inclusion of African American players on the field and also insisting that those players were treated well within the community. No discrimination at restaurants, and working hard to prevent discrimination against his black players in housing to such a degree that he entered the political sphere looking at ways to make sure that those players were not discriminated against. And in addition, he had a gay brother that he loved and adored and abhorred discrimination against gay people way back in the 60s, Pat, way back in the 60s, and had told players on his team, if you are gay, that you have our support. So I guess it just is interesting going from Angela yesterday to Hans today. It's just a nice view of how diverse the state is and how wonderful that is. And I thank you for it.
Thank you, Joe. Thank you so much. Those are such nice, kind words. A great way to start the day here. And I'm going to begin my response. Unfortunately, there's a quote that I noted yesterday from the U.S. Supreme Court, coming from Justice Clarence Thomas, of all people. And they were listening to the case about diversity and Students for Fair Admissions versus UNC, a case that challenges affirmative action. And these are the exact words from Justice Clarence Thomas. "I've heard the word diversity quite a few times, and I don't have a clue what it means." And I'm just going to leave that sit there for a moment. Justice Clarence Thomas, "I've heard the word diversity quite a few times, and I don't have a clue what it means." I'm not surprised. I'm not surprised, because everything about his record, his utterances, shows a complete blind spot about the American experience, and that it is not enough to say, well, I don't see color, or however it is that Clarence Thomas and others like him would describe things. And so therefore, I don't see color, and we don't really need to do anything different. It is so stupefyingly ignorant of America's past and as well America's current situation. If you want to watch, you know how they talk about own the libs, you know, and liberal tears, you want to own a conservative or just get them riled up. It's not just the, you know, the word diversity. Use this one, systemic racism. Ah, that's not a thing. It's not a thing. There's no such thing. And that's just something that liberals make up, et cetera, et cetera. Did you not hear us in the last hour talking to Dr. Kristen Lierley about how much higher the rate of deaths is among Black mothers in Wisconsin compared to the rest of the state and nationwide as well? One of the first big stories we did at Up North News was about systemic racism and what it is and what it means and why it still exists today in healthcare, in education, in our judicial system. Systemic racism does not mean that there are people in white robes who are discriminating explicitly against somebody. It doesn't mean a judge is a Ku Klux Klan member or a doctor or what have you. What it means is conditions that are there that treat a population differently because things haven't improved over time. And as a result, in healthcare, by having hospital systems set up where now hospitals are relocating out into the suburbs, you have fewer options in our central cities for people to obtain healthcare. Or historically, and yes, studies have been done about this, if you look at the same complaints coming from a white patient versus a Black patient, the Black patient's complaints are more likely to be casually minimized or dismissed, and that leads to worse outcomes. That's all systemic racism is. I don't mean all like it's not important, but it doesn't mean that there's a blatant effort to discriminate, but that there are disparities that need to be recognized and addressed. So when Joe very kindly talks about the diversity of this show, it is very intentional on my part. As I mentioned yesterday, somebody who was born and raised in a city, married a farm girl, has worked as a journalist and then a politician and candidate through just about everywhere in Wisconsin. There is nothing I enjoy more than taking my time from living in Milwaukee and my time living on Lake Wissota and my time working with constituents up throughout the North Woods and helping them see what is common between us, but also what are the challenges? What are the challenges of our farm families? What are the challenges of our, you know, new moms in Milwaukee and other large cities? And then not just exacerbating that, not just using that to divide us, which is what too many people like to do, Ron Johnson, Tim Michaels, but to actually propose ideas that can solve those problems. And that can't happen until we understand and acknowledge each other's problems, that there are real problems in Kenosha or Green Bay, and there are real problems up in Lincoln County. And that we all should be invested in that. We should want a legislature and members of Congress who will allocate resources in the right way that will fix not just my problems, but your problems as well. That's what gives us a healthy state and, you know, what helps us rise above a very poisonous atmosphere that we seem to have these days. We are the ones who can do that once we appreciate each other a little better. So Joe, thank you again. Tomorrow, Matt Rothschild of the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign and Dick Ausman, Democratic candidate for Congress in the 7th District, running against incumbent Republican Tom Tiffany. You can follow me on Facebook, either on Twitter at Pat Kreitlow or on Facebook, search for Pat Kreitlow Up North. And all of our daily work is at upnorthnewswi.com. For Aaron Zomers, I'm Pat Kreitlow. Have a great day. We'll see you Wednesday.